As part of this project, all the women producing radio were asked to find a way to tell their own stories. If people were to understand the realities of the child welfare system, they needed to hear the voices of those who lived through it. One of these voices is that of Melanie. She ended up in the system as a kind of a refugee. And, as you'll hear, she ended up a prisoner. But Melanie's story does not end as you might expect. Here is her voice.
I had no mother who loved me at a time when I needed love. I had a brother who sexually abused me at a time when I was learning about sex. I had drugs to comfort me and keep me warm on those cold nights alone on the streets. I had a father who let me suffer in a lockup detention center instead of helping me deal with my problems. These are just some of the memories I'd rather forget.
My name is Melanie. I'm 26, mother of three. I finally have control of my life. I'm stable, I'm married, and I'm happy. But it hasn't always been this comfortable. Let me explain. Let me take you back to my childhood. My mother abandoned me and my older brother at a very innocent age. I don't have any memories of my mother. We ended up living with my father. I remember the embarrassment of being motherless throughout elementary school. I got strange looks when I told my teachers I had no mother. They would still force me to make those stupid Mother's Day cards with a big heart on the front, and when you open it, it says, "I love you, Mommy.
I love you, Mommy."
God, I hated her for leaving us. I was so ashamed. How could she do that? I hated her more every year that passed without her. Every year I was forced to make those cards for her, and then I'd have to bring it home and give it to my dad.
Can you imagine how he felt?
Being motherless really hit me hard when I started high school. My brother started to pay more attention to me. He ridiculed me in front of the entire school. He'd bring my underwear on the school bus and pass them around to his friends who would smell them and laugh. He'd sneak up behind me, pull up my shirt, and expose my chest in the cafeteria. He even pinned me down in snowbanks, spitting in my face, and fondled my sore, developing breasts. I remember when I told on him. Dad just smiled and looked at him casually and told him to stop teasing me.
You know what, Dad? He wasn't teasing me.
He was torturing me. Where were you when I needed you? You were the parent. You were supposed to stand up for me. I was your only little girl. There was no escape. Depression hit hard and my grades started to slip. I was heading for a downward spiral. The only thing that eased my pain was drugs. Any kind. I didn't really care. As long as it could numb my feelings and I could feel good about myself again. That's all that really mattered. Was feeling good. I wanted to be free. When the public ridiculing stopped at school, he became more violent at home. He threatened me with knives and baseball bats. New bruises every week. Occasional black eyes. I wouldn't dare tell. I was terrified for my life. He started coming into my room at night.
"Can I rub your back?"
he begged. As scared as I was, I don't know why I said yes. As he touched me all over, probing my body, I felt sick to my stomach. I could feel him rubbing up against me. I was paralyzed with fear. I shut my eyes tight and drifted off somewhere safe. When he was done, he whispered in my ear, "I'll kill you if you tell." I convinced myself that his perversion was my fault. I let this happen. How could I let this happen? I had to get out of that house. I couldn't stand the threats or the unbearable guilt that was growing in my stomach. I decided to run away, believing I had a better chance of survival on my own. Dear Dad, when you get this letter, I will have already left. Don't worry about me. I can take care of myself. I can't stand living here anymore. And it's not your fault. I really hope you can understand this. I will never live with you again, so please don't come looking for me. I'm really sorry.
Living on the streets was tough, but at least I was in control of my body. I promised to never be touched by someone I didn't want. Drugs kept me warm and awake at night, and that was important. I didn't want to sleep because I was afraid something terrible was going to happen.
I slept during the day.
I squatted in old dirty buildings with other homeless kids, partying, drinking, just until the anxiety faded. I played the tough girl, but deep down, I was a nervous wreck. I traveled the streets with a knife ready available in one pocket and mace in another. I thought I was well protected. My backpack consisted of a condom, a toothbrush, one set of extra clothes, deodorant, bubble gum, and my stuffed dog that I couldn't bear to leave behind with my brother. God only knows what he would have done with it. While I was living on the street, I met an older man who let me sleep at his house sometimes. He would let me eat and shower. But after a few weeks, he started to get really creepy. He'd walk in on me while I was showering and steal my clothes and towels so I'd have to get out of the shower completely naked. He'd sit there on his rocking chair with a big smirk on his face while I desperately searched for my clothes. The last time I saw him, he came into the room I was sleeping in, completely naked, and he locked the door behind him. I screamed so loud the neighbors heard and called the police. I was then picked up and placed in a temporary holding cell for young people. Little did I know that was the last night I was free for the next year of my life. The next year of my life I spent in a French lockup detention center. Social workers gave me an ultimatum. They told me either I should go home or sign voluntary papers placing myself into a group home. That was an easy choice. I decided on group home and signed those papers. I thought I was going to live in a group home. Little did I know my father was speaking with the social worker behind my back. My father thought it would be in my best interest to keep me in lockup until I came to my senses and decided to come home. I hated the fact that the adults that surrounded me thought they knew what was best for me. They didn't have a clue. He didn't know about the assaults. He just thought I was rebelling against him. Not only did they put me in a jail for young criminals, but everyone was French. I wasn't even allowed to speak English. I didn't know how to speak French. This was ridiculous. Injustice. How do you justify locking up a victim of sibling abuse with other teen criminals in a center that can't even understand your own language? I wasn't a criminal. My every move was documented. It seemed like when I sneezed, staff would log it in their big black book of notes. I was only allowed to get fresh air once every 2 weeks for 20 minutes. We had to walk by ourselves on a track in a fenced-in area, one behind the other, like elephants. We weren't allowed to talk to each other. We weren't allowed to smoke cigarettes. We had to keep our head down and our hands in our pockets. We walked 4 times around, then we had to go back inside for 2 more weeks of lockup. It was really depressing. I'd get one phone call every 3 days, if I was good, if I participated, and if I communicated with the staff. I'd get a 15-minute phone call to either my father, my brother, or my social worker. I wasn't allowed to call anybody else. For the longest time, I had no phone privileges because I wasn't able to express myself in French. They forbid me to speak English. How was I supposed to communicate when I didn't even know how to speak French?
And I tried.
finally, I learned how to speak French. And then slowly, I started getting phone privileges because I was communicating and I was expressing my needs. That's all bullshit. It's all a game. I had to conform to what they wanted me to be. I was their puppet. They spoke. I obeyed. That was the only way I was getting out of there. Sundays was visiting day, and every now and then my father would come in to visit me, and he'd say, "Are you ready to come home now?" I wasn't going back there. I was really stubborn. From the day I left home, I have never been back. I finally opened up to my social worker and told him exactly what happened. I thought he would keep it confidential. God, I was wrong. The next time we had a family meeting, he brought it up. My father was shocked. He didn't believe me. My brother just looked at me and basically told me that I was a liar, and that I was just saying that to get attention, and that my brother would never do such a disgusting thing like that. You see, in the eyes of my father, my brother was a saint.
January 1st, 1995, I moved into my very first apartment. I was finally free. I cried. I finished high school that year and moved on to college. I got a job and supported myself through school. My independence was flourishing. The more independent I was, the stronger that made me. I was not a statistic. I was going to be a normal person.
I walked as a soldier. They carried me home. Then I walked to the factory. They gave me the dole. So I read till my head spin. To know of this world that I share with a pretty young girl.
These are just some of the stories of my past that have made me the person I am today.
I took my first steps at the century's turn.
I've struggled through some really tough tides in my life, but made it out alive. Someone recently asked me how I was able to live through all this and come out being a strong, productive, confident member of society. My answer was, I had a strong will to prove everybody wrong. People said a lot of things. They judged me, and they said I'd become a drug-addicted prostitute, homeless, and alone. But that didn't happen. Once I finally had control of my life, I understood that it was my choices that would ultimately decide my fate. I aimed not to be a statistic. I'm a happily married mother of three. I have a warm home to go to at the end of every day. And when I see my children smiling at me, I feel this overwhelming feeling of accomplishment. This is what keeps me going. This is my life.